What's up, Packers fans? Aaron Egler here with Cheesehead TV. As always, on Beer and Ball with Billy Schmidt. Bill, how are you, buddy? I know you were playing hurt last week on some of the assignments that you had. We didn't even record a Beer and Ball, somewhat because you were down and I was traveling and things just never quite meshed. So we're back. We have a win to talk about. Thank goodness. How you
feeling? We're back, baby. We are back and luckily feeling a lot better. Man, that stomach bug can bite you and bite you quick and in an ugly, ugly fashion. But no, luckily, it subsided and symptoms didn't return on Christmas Day from the noon to three window.
That's a win. That is a win right
there.
Like,
we kind of thought they might.
There was some trepidation heading into this game. There's no question about it. I was trying to stay somewhat grounded in the sense that I thought for sure that the Miami Dolphins were going to toss the rock all over the yard. And, of course, the big play to Waddle early in the game, I thought, okay, here we go. Man, the biggest takeaway from this game, and I understand Tua was diagnosed with a concussion afterwards, and that's going to color kind of everything that transpired in the second half.
Yeah.
But as I've been saying all week, man, the Packers made the plays that were there to be made, and that has not always been the case this year. So my takeaway is, they closed the door when they had to. And, you know, this is on a day where the offense did just enough, but the defense kept handing them opportunities. And that's encouraging, to say the least.
Well, in Nags, the more and more I keep looking at it and hearing people react to it, it's the part of the game that you anticipated seeing earlier in the year where the defense was going to keep you in a game while the offense kind of spiraled and sputtered a little bit. And they play the whole second half without Christian Watson, who obviously from the first half was the entire game plan, because six catches for him and seven combined touches for AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones in the first half. It was clear that nine was the focal point, and you get the shot that Fox shows of him saying to somebody, "No, I'm not playing." Like, okay, well, this is going to get dicey.
Oh, here we go.
But yeah, to be able to take the ball away like Jaron Reed did going into half, set you up with the 3 points. That was the biggest one. Like you mentioned, the 100%. Two picks at the end are going to get clouded because people are going to say, well, he was concussed in the second quarter. No, probably not. We've got whatever it ends up being, and God bless him. Hope everything works out for him and his family. But I mean, you're at this spot where you got to create your own luck. They haven't been able to do that all year long
at all. Right.
And they get four bounces, Nags, in 32 minutes. That was the part to me where I'm a big believer in how the ball is bouncing is going to there's an avalanche feel to it. As long as you do your part, they started to do their part towards the end of the game, bringing a little bit of more heat, getting Tua off his spot, rattling him a little bit. And it sounds like Jerry Gray rattled some cages there at halftime.
And that love was that, all you needed. I love that kind of reveal from Rasul that Jerry Gray got after them at halftime. I need a recording of this. Like I need to see it because even the years now that he's been in Green Bay, obviously some of the only real kind of exposure we get to him is during training camp, during those training camp practices. I've never seen him lose his top. I've never seen him lose his cool. I've seen him like yell and get after guys a little bit in the sense of like, okay, going from drill to drill or what he wants from a certain drill or what he saw in a play from, you know, some of the 11-on-11 stuff. But I've certainly never seen him like cussing guys out. And you do see that from time to time in those situations and those types of practices. I've never seen him do that. So to kind of get that mental image, I'm like, and I love Rasul describing it. Like they're all kind of looking at each other like, oh, well, this is Jeremy's business. Like we're
in trouble now.
I love that. I absolutely love it. But you talk about Jaron
and you got to be a certain dude to be able to do that in a game. And get heard.
Oh
from.
Yeah.
And Jerry Gray's the only guy, one of the only dudes that's going to be able to do it too.
Yeah, and get a response right. Like I think it's 100%. Real easy in this day and age with a professional athlete. If you're a coach, to get up there and rant and rave and cuss guys out for them to say, yeah, that's adorable. You know, because
good we're one, paid
professionals and. You know, what are you going to tell me that I, you know, that kind of attitude that
the level of disrespect is a little bit different too.
Yep, a little bit, 100%. A little bit. But I tell you, like you say, OG, as they call him, Jerry starts getting after it. Like guys pay attention. And I think he picked the exact right moment to do it too. Like I think
he
knew I got one shot where this is going to be as effective as possible. And halftime in Miami was the moment.
There was one time when I was a ball kid for the Bucks where John Hammond came in and just lit everybody up at halftime. We had this little circular tub with six Gatorades and six waters, and he throws it against the backboard of the dry erase board in the locker room and yells, and everyone's looking around like, dude, we're making 900 times what this guy is making. We're all going to be okay. Let's just go out there and play the second half and be fine with it.
I mean, different when it's Jerry Gray coming on in, and you're in a
must-win situation, 100%.
Yes, and it pumps it up a little bit. But I'm glad you highlighted Jerron Reed, because I thought he had his best game as a Packer, not just because of that amazing play, which did, as you say, swing the entire thing. I thought the entire game's kind of swung on that play. Mm-hmm. But even outside of that moment, he was down in and down out at his best, and it is going to be interesting to watch his pairing now going forward with not only Kenny Clark, obviously, as we have seen, but now Devontae Wyatt, probably going to be seeing a lot more playing time because of Dean Lowry being placed on injured reserve. I am fascinated to see how that rotation kind of pans out along with TJ Slayton. You know, the Vikings are going to want to run the ball on Sunday. They're going to want to get Dalvin Cook loose. And the Packers, especially early in that game, certainly were having their issues trying to stop the run. And, you know, you're petrified about Justin Jefferson. You got Thielen still can hurt you. And they're still going to be playing probably the predominantly kind of shell covers that they like. They're cover three, cover two, et cetera. That's going to give Dalvin Cook some opportunities. This is going to be a big moment for Reed to kind of build on what he did in this game. Because, like I said, especially as the game went on, especially in the second half, I thought he really came to life in a way we haven't seen yet this season.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And he was their most dominant player at that spot. And that's saying something,
right?
Because of what 97 is doing.
Yep.
TJ Slayton got a bunch of work, and I thought he played well enough to get more work going forward. Agreed. But Wyatt is the one that, at least when he's had his opportunities, has taken advantage of him. So now you kind of got to dust that thing off and see if you can get a little bit of magic into it, at least into some pass rush positions, right? Because that first two steps is lethal. I mean, ability to be able to duck underneath. I know he's going up against 82. That's a tight end, a backup tight end at that. But that, you don't see 295, 300-pound dudes moving the way he does. Like, just a couple more snaps a game, and I think you're going to see an improvement there. But to go off the point of what they're going to try to do on Sunday, they're going to have to try to get Dalvin Cook going. They're going to want to, because, again, I know there's a lot of love out there for number eight right now, and a lot of people in a lot of prominent positions are beating some drums. And look at the numbers. They're pretty – more yardage than
– They're good. You can't deny it. They're good. The numbers are good.
They're not MVP numbers.
He's playing well. I don't think – I know in Packerland we're like anthema to give any kind of praise.
Sure.
That way across the border, but especially to that quarterback. But, hey, Kirk's playing well. He's playing well, point blank. You can't deny it.
No, but the weird thing is, Nags, I would go back and watch what he did last year, and I thought he was at times playing even better at points last year. So, like, there's just weird. There's a weird feeling about it, but everybody's in on the train right now. They're winning games. You should be. The way that they're going to win in a cold weather game, and it will be, you know, quote unquote cold, 30 some degrees.
Yeah, it's like hanging around 30, right? That's not really.
They're going to want to give Dalvin Cook the freaking football. Because as much as Justin Jefferson burned you all through week one, and you're still chasing 18 now, remember when 33 scored four touchdowns?
I most certainly do.
50-yard screen pass that was essentially a backbreaker.
There have been some like really disgusting, like hurt my soul victories by the Minnesota Vikings in Lambeau Field.
Oh, yeah.
That pandemic year game, where basically the Packers got two possessions in the first half and then couldn't do anything in the second half. And they just ran all over the Packers defense all day long and took the ball out of Kirk Cousins' hands. That is one of the worst. That is one of the worst. That one, that was such a weird game. The wind was so crazy. But yeah, that's one of the weirdest, like most hurtful Vikings victories in my lifetime. I hated that.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Because they couldn't do anything to stop Dalvin Cook.
It's right up there, Nags, with me sitting as my first playoff game with my dad, freezing my tail off, watching Randy Moss fake moon the crowd in 2003, knowing they're just spitting in your mouth. So, like, this is a weird situation where the Vikings obviously have still extremely a lot to play for. And I think they have at least something to try to prove to themselves. Again, they haven't run the ball exceptionally well for a full four quarters in a while. Nope. So I think that's also going to be something they try to do as a little point of emphasis. So you're going to have to prove that you can slow down Dalvin Cook if you want to win this football game. You're going to have to be able to get off the field on third down. I think that's where Justin Jefferson hurts you. But it's going to start with Dalvin Cook, in my opinion.
I mean, flipping it around, the Packers got to show that they can run the ball. You know, they do every once in a while break off some nice run, right? But they never stick to it in a material sense. They never make it kind of their identity. And I understand that's not going to happen when Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback. I get why they're a pass-first team, pass-led team, etc. But to your point, if you want to get there, but even if you do miraculously win these next two games and everything falls into place outside of the building and the Packers are in the playoffs, you're going to be on the road. What travels in the playoffs? A running game and a defense. And I don't know about this defense. I mean, who knows who they're going to be playing and what the approach will be. But I tell you what, a running game is universal. A running game makes everything work. And if the Packers can get it going heading into the postseason, let alone this game, you know, that's a way of working that can help them going forward. And I understand that Aaron Jones is dealing with whatever he's dealing with that ankle, and they still have A.J. Dillon. Patrick Taylor came to life in this game. Number of really nice snaps for that kid. I'm just saying, man, this is a team. You're talking about, Kirk Cousins' dome team got to come out in the cold, blah, blah, blah. Aaron Rodgers hasn't looked too good in the cold last couple of real cold games that he's had to play. You know what would help him a lot? A really effective running game.
And do you agree with me on this? Like, the Packers do have to muddy games up to then be able to let the take advantage throw by Rodgers go, right? Like, their best path to victory, while, you know, whatever their DVOA and all those numbers want to be over the last
number 10 and weighted DVOA for the week, number 10 in the league.
That's right.
That's a pretty 100%. Damn nice jump for the old green and gold there.
Got 23 on the math portion of my ACT, so I can't do that equation. But what I can tell you is it's a good number. So, like, they're finding ways to win, but I think more importantly, Nags, they're doing it to what you said. They're gonna have to slow the game down a little bit to be able to win this game. They slowed the second half down and slowed it to a halt.
Glad you brought that up. Mm-hmm. Why is it? Like, it seems so obvious. Sitting on the outside looking in, right? And you look at the game flow and how they're operating, like their MO on offense at the start of the game, to your point, when they're trying to really kind of feature Christian Watson and they're trying to get the passing game going, blah, blah, blah. And Aaron's patting the ball. I mean, the second play from scrimmage is all you need to look at in the first half, where you the opening kickoff inside the 10-yard line. You have never been more set up for success. You run it once. The next play, Aaron takes one of the worst sacks he's taken all year, and then Dobbs drops it on third down. And then you're kicking a field goal. Like, that is like a microcosm of this team on offense. But then you fast forward to the second half, and all of a sudden they're in a position where, okay, if we just operate the offense, we'll probably move the ball and score. And lo and behold, Aaron starts taking what's given. They run the ball a little bit more. Aaron's throwing in rhythm, and they move the ball and they score. And I don't know if it was because Christian Watson went out, you know, and maybe that like forced them into that kind of way of operating, but it's so like, you can see it. You can feel it that when Aaron starts playing in rhythm and just operates the offense, they're really effective. I just don't know
what's going on.
I think there's some.
When you
of that.
Get a new toy, you want to play with it. It's Christmas morning, Aaron. Come on now.
And that's not just some Rodgers. Of it. I think that's Matt as well. You know, it's like,
amen.
We've got this.
There
really
is somebody
explosive
calling
player.
The plays in.
Hey, I got to admit, I've fallen prey to that online with Madden. I'm throwing it to Watson like every other play, but I'm playing online in Madden. Like, that's different.
I love that Joe Davis called it out at one point during the broadcast. He's like, this is like Madden. Everyone's going for it on fourth, throwing deep on fourth down, saying, screw it. Let's have some fun.
That's how
there's
we roll now
there's a ton
Bay.
To it. And I think a lot of it comes to the way that they've played from ahead in a majority of their last number of years, right? Like, under LaFleur, they've been exceptional when playing from ahead. And once they got the read strip, whatever, get the score, They felt like they were going to go be able to double up, which was the whole premise again.
Which they did.
Be able to double up. They were able to double up. And I think well once done, they got that in their mind, Nags,
right.
they said, right. oh, we can play our style now. We can do what we want to do. Totally and then agree. They allowed themselves to get into that flow of the game. But they've been real tweaky is kind of the wrong way to put it. But right, like you're just a little antsy.
But I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and especially through the 5-game losing streak, they were really antsy and worried that the game was getting away from them when it's a 1-score game. Settle down, calm down, play your game, and you're going to be able to take advantage of it.
It was interesting because it was interesting during I think was it during the game or may have been on Packers Daily on Monday, but somebody on the YouTube comments might have been in the live chat during the game. Asked, I'm kind of paraphrasing here, obviously, but the question was along the lines of, is it just me or is Rodgers way more like patting the ball, panicky, not hitting, not going through his reads, whatever, than he has been in the past? And I'm like, I don't know if that's how I'd describe it, but I get that idea of you're looking at Rodgers in a way, especially in the first half of that game, and you're thinking, what's he waiting for? What's he so kind of jittery about? And then you get to the second half, and he's rising and firing. He's playing in rhythm. And I don't know, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, Aaron's not going through the reads. He's, an 18-year veteran, 4-time MVP. He knows what he's doing when it comes to reading the defense and making his progressions, blah, blah, blah. I would never presume to say, he's not going through his reads. But I certainly see a lot more happy feet and a lot more patting in the football and a lot more indecision early in these games than we have in years past. And I don't know if that's still dealing with not having Devontae there. I don't know if it's not trusting what he sees because things have gotten so tight because they got to make the most of every one of these games or else their season's over. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but it is apparent. And I'm fascinated by the dichotomy of when he lets it rip, when he hits the top of his drop, trusts what he sees and just reads, makes his progression reads and just lets it rip. They look phenomenal. They look like unstoppable. It kind of goes back to that first kind of 3 series against Tampa back in week 3. Mm-hmm. That's about the most efficient they've been all year. But then the Aaron Jones fumble happens, and then everything kind of falls apart. You start seeing him second guess himself, and we're where we are now. So it's so interesting to me just because of the fact that I can see it. I have no idea how to quantify it. I have no idea how to truly analyze it, but I definitely know it's there.
Well, and there's part of me that also believes that there's the second guessing maybe of that of himself, but I also think there's some stability that comes from the play calls of just being confident in the rhythm that's going to come, right? Being able to somewhat the joke of finishing each other's sentences, right? Like kind of knowing what's going to be called by LaFleur. And when they're leading, it feels like they are on the same page of exactly what's going to be coming up next. They're kind of reading each other's minds 2 or 3 plays down the line, a little bit of a chess game. But I mean, when you're playing chess and then you get backed up, you get put in check one time, you're sitting there like, okay. Clock is ticking a little bit quicker. Hitting the buzzer a little bit quicker, right? Like, so you just get a little antsy. And I think that's part of it. Case in point, the 4th-and-2 throw and Godspeed. Yep. I know you were losing your mind on that 4th-and-2 play.
Yeah. Well, it's like it. I said the next day, we all cheer when it works and I cheer. I'm the biggest cheerleader in the world, but
I think it works in the second half because of the way that you're talking about the in rhythm play in the style that they were moving at with the efficiency and the flow. But when you're grasping at straws in the first half, you could almost feel like that thing was going to go 5 yards over the top.
And it did.
The settled down nature allows you to hit some of those big plays when you're understanding and kind of feeling that rhythm.
Just play in rhythm. And look, Aaron Rodgers has forgotten more about football than I'll ever know. So it's not like I'm sitting here saying anything he's not aware of.
Oh,
but
no.
It is fascinating just to see it play out and just to see it so laid bare, kind of black and white, like A, B, like act 1 and act 2 in that game on Sunday. It was like blazingly obvious to me. I did want to touch on the work up front by the offensive line because – you're already talking. Zach Tom is in there, still a rookie, playing well, playing good football, no doubt. I love seeing Runyon get on the move. You know, they pulled Myers a couple times. But then, you know, hey, shout out to Royce Newman, man. We talked a lot about his shortcomings here on Beer and Ball earlier this year for good reason. It was hard to watch at times. But, man, he played a really good game. I was shocked. That's the only word I can say, because I thought for sure we were in for, like, Jason Spriggs 2 Electric Boogaloo when he had to come in at right tackle. And he proved me dead wrong, because they didn't really materially have to change much when it comes to,
well,
like,
the crazy
approach
thing
on offense.
He first comes in, and I think they put Wilkins on him like two of the first three snaps.
Right.
And I
said,
wow, that's going to be a tough
matchup. Here we go. Right?
That's going to be a tough matchup. And they moved. They kept moving 94 around. I don't know exactly if I would have done the same thing. But to the point, dude, he had whatever, a false start, maybe a hold. It's going to happen.
He gave up a pressure.
He hasn't played in, what, 9 weeks?
Yeah, it was the Jets game.
And he's going up against some legit players when you're talking about Christian Wilkins and Phillips over there in 15. He's speed that is pretty intense. I thought he played what you needed a backup guy to play like. And I saw more and more throughout the week of if Bakhtiari goes, how does the movement, you know, shake out?
I am fascinated to see. I mean, obviously a large part
love
of it
to know
comes down to, you know, how Yosh is. Like, if Yosh is good to go, Yosh can play. I mean, that's not a question. Mm-hmm. I think you put Zach back on the bench, etc. But if Yosh can't go, I would guess that they move Zach Tom over to right tackle. I mean, that would be, I think, to me,
I
that's the
think
obvious
so too.
Choice, right?
Yeah, I think so too. And that would be, now just continue to chalk up all the positions that this kid has played. His first year.
That's what he does, and man. He just comes in there and saves your bacon.
And even if he is, though, and the reason why maybe I'm just a little bit hesitant that he is going to go, because even if Dave is practicing, we're all thinking off the appendectomy. We also do have to think of how much he's going to practice off the knee, too. So, like,
100%.
It's going to be a lot of reps for him over at left, and maybe I'm going to flip over at right. Maybe I'll still play there at game time.
And God knows how many times this year have we gone through a week where it looks like Dave's going to play. And then, hell, we had a day where, like, Zach Tom found out he was playing left tackle the morning of the game. So there's a number of ways that this could go. I mean, they could think they have Dave back for the whole week and then not have him. You know, that's entirely possible. So, yeah.
So that's why I'm not positive that Zach goes over. Because I agree with you.
No,
I think it's the obvious one, but, man, he has played himself into a pretty good spot going into next year. He's gonna have a good chance to be a starter at one of the spots next year. He can kind of pick which one.
All I know is, thank goodness, you know, there's not an opponent coming in with two really good edge rushers. I mean, it's, you know, it's just a couple of dudes who like to wreck things on the outside, and Daniel
and Hunter one that and absolutely hates Smith. You
and Za'Darius, you know Za'Darius is dying for that moment when he gets a sack on Rodgers and gets to pull up and reveal whatever he's going to reveal under his shirt. That's a moment he is absolutely praying for.
He wrote miss me with a question mark on his shirt. And that's what he's going to pull on up.
That's a good idea. We should do, like, over unders or bets on what his shirt might say. That's good.
Right. Cause he doesn't have a captaincy. So maybe that's like, oh, captain, my captain, a little something like that.
That's so good.
He's gonna find find some kind of good troll. He might wear the hat and t-shirt.
Oh, he is gonna troll the hell out of
Packers fans.
They are
gonna be feeling themselves walking in.
There is no question about it. Always feeling ourselves here on Beer and Ball. You're gonna be back at the stadium, right? You're gonna be there.
You're dang right. Yep.
Yes, sir. That's what I'm talking about. Make sure you check Billy out. 97.3 The Game. He and Drew locking it down on Packers OT after every single Packers contest. Billy, can't thank you enough for the time, man. I'll talk to you next week.
Appreciate it, brother. We'll talk next week. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, brother.